I'm Jamie Orchard. This is number 0233, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0233. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet actor Ben Zantwoord, who is one of the stars of the new Canadian police drama, 19-2, which airs on both Bravo and CTV.
It's not really a procedural thing. It's actually you follow the characters in their procedures, in their homes, in their lives. It's more like a soap opera for me. These guys happen to be cops in that station in this city. But other than that, I mean, it's so much based on the characters and what they go through.
Lou Anne Kahn, author of I Dare Me, on how she spent a year doing something new every single day.
In the month leading up to January 1st, 2010, I came up with this idea, kind of self-therapy, to do something new every single day. And I started with the polar bear plunge. And I knew I would have to come up with 364 firsts after that. But some of them, I made a list, but it's very hard to come up with that many new first-time experiences. So some days I'd wake up, I didn't know what I was doing. So it was a hodgepodge plan, let's say that.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge, where lately it's been very cold.
Today while I'm talking to you, I've just started doing something very new. I've never done it before. I'm wearing a vest, which is heated by a little battery contraption. And so far, because the temperature, you know, has been very cold here and probably will continue to be cold. So I'm either going to be very warm and toasty all day or I'm going to electrocute myself.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0233, was Jamie Orchard, the anchor at Global News here in Montreal, the other place that I work at. Jamie, as I've always known her to be, the global goddess. Thank you very much, Jamie, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Emergency responders in Germany said a barn fire was caused by flatulent cows releasing methane gas around a massaging machine. Police and firefighters say they were called to a barn in Rasdorf, Hesse, to put out flames sparked when methane from the unusually flatulent cows reacted with static energy from a massaging machine designed to increase milk production. One cow was treated for burns, and the roof of the barn suffered damage from the flames. This could have been an utter disaster. Overly flatulent cows. Now you know one of the main reasons why I don't eat grass. Anyway, speaking of fires, 2 or 3 years ago, there was a story of the guy who burned his house down while trying to burn a squirrel's nest out of his gutters. Then there was the guy who burned his house down trying to thaw the frozen water pipes in his crawl space with a blowtorch. We mentioned both of those stories on past Stuff File programs. But this family set their Alabama home on fire when they tried to burn off toilet paper stuck in a tree. Yeah. Cheryl Croswell said they were cleaning their home after it had been toilet papered as part of a teen prank. Unable to get rid of pesky pieces on a tree's branch, she lit one piece of paper with a lighter in hopes that it would burn off. But she said the wind blew the flaming piece into the yard and set the grass ablaze. It just popped out into a little patch, and we tried to put it out, and it just kept going, she said. There was no injuries reported, but the home was destroyed. Well, on the plus side, the toilet paper is no longer a problem. By the way, if their grass caught fire, just how dry was their lawn? And anyway, never mind the grass catching fire. Just the mere fact that she's lighting toilet paper in a tree seems startlingly dumb. I mean, Correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe wood burns. Yeah. Anyway, a Norwegian man was sentenced to 14 months in prison for demolishing his brother's home with a forklift. The incident happened last summer in the village of Etne. Strula Vic Vesley, a lawyer for the victim, said the man decided to demolish his older brother's home after hearing rumors that he planned to knock down an older house on the family property that the younger brother believed he had a right to live in. His way of reacting was totally crazy, said Vic Vesley. You don't tear down a house because you hear some rumors. The older brother and his 16-year-old son were in the house when the suspect began tearing down the walls with the forklift. Along with the jail time, the younger brother has been ordered to pay $164,000 in damages to his older brother and received a 5-year driving ban for drunken driving while fleeing the scene. Okay, I have a question. If you're driving a forklift and you're drunk, can that really be considered fleeing the scene? I mean, it's not like you see forklifts at Daytona. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, an Alabama judge has set bail for Richard Lee Shahan, age 53, at $100,000. And if he manages to raise that bail, he must agree to house arrest under electronic monitoring to ensure he doesn't leave the country. Shahan, a former pastor at the First Baptist Church in Homewood, is accused of murdering his wife, who was found stabbed to death. He was arrested as he tried to board a plane for Germany with $27,000 in cash in his luggage. Prosecutors say they waded through 3,000 of his emails and determined that after Germany, he planned to then head to Kazakhstan and never return to the U.S. Jefferson County Deputy District Attorney Lee Grathney says the emails show Shahan planned to begin a new life with his boyfriend, who he intended to marry. He had no home to return to, and he had said his goodbyes to his families. Nonsense, says Shahan's attorneys, who say prosecutors are doing everything they can to try to manufacture a murder case. Rather, they say he was simply heading to Germany for a 3-year stint as a missionary. A position as a missionary, the missionary position, what's the difference? And by the way, if somebody was really planning to run off and marry a same-sex partner, is Kazakhstan the place where you really want to start that life? I mean, really? Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Actor Ben Zantwoord is one of the stars of a new television series that has hit the airwaves here in Canada. It's called 192, a police drama that takes place right here in Montreal. And Ben's joins us on the line right now, right here in Montreal. Hi, Ben's.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, sir. Always a pleasure.
Likewise. The pleasure's all mine.
You are playing the role of a police officer, an officer by the name of Tyler Joseph, who is an alcoholic beat cop. And the thing that's interesting about this show, for those who aren't familiar, this show already premiered and was already done in French. It's now being done in English, and you're one of the only actors to play the role in both series, correct?
That is correct. So it's a very unique opportunity to be able to reprise the role in English. So it doesn't happen often, and I feel very grateful about that opportunity.
Are there differences in the scripts between the French version and the English version of the show?
No, the scripts are essentially the same. I would say probably 95% the same. They rarely tweak anything on in terms of writing wise. They add little things and remove certain things that they don't feel are appropriate, but the majority of what was there in French is going to be there in English.
Now, you are fluently bilingual, so you know the nuances of both languages. Does it make it easier for you to adapt the character from one to the other because you've already played that role in one language?
I wish I had someone asking me those kind of questions yesterday. That was our media day. That's a good question. It doesn't really, at first, originally, they didn't want anybody from the French show to come and audition for the English show. So I had a lot of experience working, on Canadian television, I was sort of left out at the beginning. So then, there were guys across the country that were like emailing me and then Facebooking me asking me for advice as they were going to audition for Tyler. So I had already said, okay, no problem. It's not going to be me. It's going to be someone else. So I'll help them out. And what I would tell them is, you know what? No matter what you see someone else do, you know, you might be the best actor, but you cannot duplicate what, you know, what the other person has done because you don't have their skill set. So you have to bring your stuff to it. And then, you know, ultimately, you know, they made the rounds and it came back to me. And of course, I'm very happy about that. But when I did it, I never thought about what I did in French either. I took my own advice and said, you know what? This is something new. This is something with a different rhythm, with a different energy. So I'm not going to start off from where I was in French. I'm going to trust my director, which was Louis Choquette. And I think it's the way to do it. I don't think you can actually duplicate or even start from that point.
One of the things that's always impressed me about your career as an actor is that as a black actor, you have not been typecast. I've seen you play cops. I've seen you play bad guys. I've seen you play people from a lower economic background to somebody from a higher economic background and everything in between. How do you explain your opportunities that, quite frankly, so many other actors on both sides of the language barrier and also both sides of the 49th parallel in the United States and Canada have had problems with in the past?
Another great question. You know, for me, you know, you have to play your physicality and you have to play your face. You know, you can never get around that. If you look like a really bad guy, then you have to accept that that's how they're going to see you, you know, until you can change it. And if you look like, you know, the girl next door, the guy next door, or, you know, good old, you know, like the sidekick, then, you know, that's something you have to embrace. In my case, I don't have a particular look one way or the other. So, you know, and I've always been, you know, told that, you know, I'm more like of a leading man who can do many, many things. Now, I haven't always had the opportunity to lead all these shows and movies and series, but to play different parts and different things, I think it has to go with the energy. And I tell my, you know, my management team, when you look at a role, when you suggest me for a role, and even the roles I accept to go in for, I don't want them if they're too, you know, stereotypical. I mean, yes, sometimes you have to go there, but I like to make sure that I go with the energy. And so, for example, if I'm, you know, I'm 6'4", 240 pounds, that cannot be, you know, you can't get around. But pretty much everything else you can get around it. So that's how I look at it. And I think that's the energy that comes out of me, which allows me to play those different roles.
So what you're saying is you're not going to be playing a jockey anytime soon.
Exactly.
Okay. The show 19-2 is being seen on, it had its premiere last week. It's being seen on Bravo on Wednesdays and CTV on Thursdays. Tell us a little bit about, I mean, I talked about the fact that your character is an alcoholic beat cop, Tyler Joseph. Tell us about the show in general and what people can expect if they haven't already seen the premiere.
Okay. So, you know, a lot of times, especially nowadays, it's very in style, you know, the procedural stuff, procedural dramas, you know, case by case, week by week, and that's cool, and we enjoy them, and you know, we've come to accept those in our household. This character, this show, 19-2, doesn't. It's not really a procedural thing. It's actually you follow the characters, you know, in their procedures, in their homes, in their lives. So it's more like a soap opera for me, where these guys happen to be cops in that station in this city. But other than that, I mean, you just—it's so much based on the characters and what they go through. And to me, the strength of the show that, you know, that got you know, was critically acclaimed in French, was always the characters, the story, and the characters. So I think that no matter what happens, you know, when you bring something to another language, you have to make sure you keep that. And I believe, you know, having the right guys in charge, namely the director, Louis Choquette, and Eric Kendra, who took some episodes as well, is just to make sure that you allow those characters to breathe and you allow that story to remain and the way the story is told. And I think that's what has happened, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the rest of Canada has to say about it.
One of the things that we are certainly not used to as far as television is concerned, certainly in Canada, is the role of Montreal as literally a character in the show. It is seen, it is understood, it is Montreal, and that doesn't happen very often.
No, you know, it doesn't. And it's one of the great things that happened with this show. You know, that not only you know, it being shot here and said here allowed me to, you know, play, you know, act in the French and in the English. But had it been done in Toronto, I wouldn't have had that opportunity. So that was number one. And also number two, yeah, to actually play Montreal as Montreal is, I don't think has been done. My recollection, you could probably help me on that. It hasn't been done on a Canadian show, I don't think. I mean, I know a lot of movies come to Montreal to shoot, dubs as Europe or France, you know, even Russia and all these things, but it never really plays for Montreal, which is very, very interesting, and I think that the people will enjoy that. And the rest of Canada, I don't think has seen. There's a lot of people who have not really. They know Montreal. They might have been to Montreal at a jazz festival, but to actually, you know, study and look at the architecture, they're going to appreciate the show because a lot of those scenes that we did were in old Montreal, and I think it's gonna express the richness of the city.
One of the things, is there any pressure to succeed? And the reason why I say that, the French version of the show has been very successful, has been an award-winning program. Is that something that is in the mind of the cast and crew that, oh gosh, we're doing this, you know, in the other solitude, and the two solitudes definitely are different. What do you think the success rate is going to be as compared to how it played in French?
Yeah, you know, it's a different market for sure. It's a larger pool. They have more choices. You know, somebody who lives in Vancouver or Toronto or Calgary, they have choices. They watch American television much more than the French Quebecer would. So they have those options, you know. But I think that there's a sense of pride as well, knowing that, hey, this is not a show that is being remade that's from, you know, somewhere else. It's a show that's being remade that's from our country. And that also, it's happened before a couple of times. I don't think it was as successful. Frankly, I don't think those shows that they started from were hit shows. You know, that's a huge difference. You know, I know this is probably, they said, I heard somewhere that this is the third time that this happened, where a show that was done in French is being done in English. But with all due respect to those shows, I'm sure they were great shows, but they were not this show. This show, in my opinion, is going to go down as, you know, the greatest show to ever come out of Quebec in French. And so, you know, to me, when you start there, you have a very high success rate that the rest of Canada will say, you know what, I want to see what's going on over there. I want to know how it is. And plus, you know, the stories are real, and the procedures that we do go through are supported by, real police officers, real consultants. They're always on set to make sure that the police aspect is always on point. And, you know, I think that along with the fact that they know that it was so widely accepted in Quebec, and there's a lot of bilingual people across the country who at least have one member of their family who's seen the show, who's heard about the show. So there's going to be that curiosity, which buys you maybe, you know, 2-3 episodes. And so if the job is well done right out the gate, I think we have a lot of new fans coming up.
Well, it seems to be a renaissance in some Canadian television of late, and we've had some series in the past, both on CTV and Global, ironically, that have done well in this genre. Flashpoint and Rookie Blue come to mind. So, and both of those shows not only succeeded in Canada, but they also got some attention in the United States. Is there a chance for 19-2 to do that if it does well?
I believe this is part of the game plan. You know, if you look at the casting, I think it's already built for that. No one's ever told me this, and I don't know this for a fact, but I do, when you bring in, Adrian Holmes to play the role that was originally Réal Bossé, so it goes from, a 50-year-old white man to a, 35-year-old black man, it's a huge difference. And I think that, you know, by keeping me in there and having Mylène, who plays Bérangère, and she's obviously has a mix to her as well. And there's other characters in there that there's Conrad Pla who's obviously has a mix in him as well. So there's a lot of the way it was cast, it's already built for success in the States, if you ask me. And also the strength, again, of the stories, because stories are universal. So the story, the way it's told, and the acting, it's not to say that we're the best actors ever, but from one all the way down, they're very experienced actors, actors that have been leads on series, actors that have been asked to do a lot more than they have to do on 19-2. So we're all, it's like an all-star team. You know, it's like an all-star team where you might not be a starter, but when they put you in the game, you're going to act like a starter. And so for me, we had all the elements are in place, you know, for this to take, you know, to take off, even in the States. So there's no reason why it shouldn't. I mean, like you said, Ricky Blue and Flashpoint definitely had success. I'll have success in the States, and I believe the 19-2 is cut from that same cloth.
The show is called 19-2. It's on Bravo on Wednesday, CTV on Thursdays. Ben Zantuan, thank you very much for being on the show, and continued success with all you do.
Thank you, my man. Always a pleasure talking to you. Looking forward to do it again.
Actor Ben Zantuan from the new television drama 19-2. It airs in Canada on Bravo on Wednesdays and on CTV on Thursdays. You can check out his website at benzantuan.com. And, of course, you can find the link on my website at thestufffile.com. Just go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0233, and you'll find the link.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal healthcare, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of I Dare Me, plus Peter Franklin. The Gabby Cabby shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And, of course, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way and lots more Stuff File news on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right back to the stuff, shall we? A woman called a sheriff on her neighbor in St. Charles Township, Illinois, who was sticking a gun out of his bathroom window and shooting. A Kane County deputy says the unidentified man, who was in his 80s, by the way, told him that he was simply shooting off the icicles that were hanging from his roof, which was safe because he was pointing the gun, which is a .22 revolver, up. He stated that if anybody was hit by the falling round, it would be just like getting hit with a piece of hail. The deputy noted that in his report. Anyway, the deputy told him that it was unsafe and illegal. He advised that he didn't know he couldn't shoot out of the window of his residence and it wouldn't happen again, the report concluded. The man was not arrested or cited. Let me repeat that. The man was not arrested or cited. Anybody have an issue with that? Meanwhile, what's happening with those deadly icicles, huh? Jennifer Grooms, age 29, called police from a Palm Beach Gardens, Florida restaurant. She complained that parking valets refused to give her the keys to her car because they thought she was drunk. The responding officer agreed with the valets, but Grooms insisted that she was okay to drive. She refused offers of a taxi or calling friends and allegedly told the officer he was obligated to drive her home because she had left her two children there alone. Despite warnings, grooms allegedly got into her car, daring the officers to arrest her, which they did. Once they got grooms to the station, someone was dispatched to her apartment where they found grooms' children, ages 6 and 10, who were alone while she was out drinking. She was charged with disorderly intoxication, resisting arrest without violence, escape, and 2 counts of child neglect. She was released the next morning, and reporters have been unable to reach her for comment. Hey, have the reporters checked the bar? Just asking. The staff of a drugstore in Gainesville, Florida, probably watched the customer fairly closely when he came in. It was 3:30 a.m. And they say they saw that he picked up 2 bottles of massage oil, 2 pairs of headphones, a box of condoms, a flashlight, and 10 cans of energy drinks, and walked out without paying for any of them. Police got to Joel Louis Velez, age 28, before he even got to his car, and what he had in his car may explain his purchases. A woman who was passed out on the front seat. He was charged with theft and later with smuggling cocaine into a jail, which is probably nothing compared to what he might have been charged by the time sunup rolled around. Okay, we have a Darwin file story for you. You know, many people try to smuggle methamphetamine through the U.S.-Mexico border crossing in San Diego. They do it sometimes by dissolving it in water and disguising it in juice bottles. So an inspector was suspicious of a couple of bottles Cruz Marceliano Velasquez had with him. Now, Velasquez, a 16-year-old from Tijuana, tried to allay suspicions by taking a big sip, according to an official report. This is the Darwin fall. You know where this goes, don't you? His attempt failed, and he was handcuffed in a security office. Then he began screaming, my heart," which he yelled in Spanish. The San Diego County Medical Examiner reported that Cruz died after drinking the liquid, highly concentrated methamphetamine. You know, if he'd used his head, he wouldn't have had to scream about his heart. That's all I'm saying. And the fact that it's the Darwin file. And you all know, when you hear the Darwin file, the tree of life is often self-pruning. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, jurors may have to see some stuff that they might never be able to unsee if a defendant who's acting as his own attorney gets his way. The South Florida man wants to introduce sex tapes and intimate photographs of himself and his wife as evidence in his criminal trial to try to prove that his marriage was real and not just undertaken for immigration purposes. The trial of Rogerio Scatrone in federal court in Fort Lauderdale has nothing to do with sex. The Brazilian-born former professional race car driver who lived in Boca Raton before his arrest is charged with 27 counts of mail fraud and 2 counts of lying to immigration authorities. The 43-year-old businessman is accused of operating a multimillion-dollar mail fraud. Now, I wonder how his wife feels about their sex tapes and pictures being shown. Oh, and please tell me that she at least knew those sex tapes and pictures actually existed. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest on the program, shall we? Luann Kahn is an Emmy-winning television journalist who felt that she was in a bit of a rut. So over the period of a year, 365 days, she tried something new every single day. That journey is chronicled in her book, I Dare Me, How I Rebooted and Recharged My Life by Doing Something New Every Day. Luann joins us on the line right now from Pennsylvania. Hi, Luann.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us.
I'm happy to do it.
Now, are you, first of all, what was it that made you feel you were in a rut? Because, as I said, you're a journalist, you're a TV journalist. You got a pretty exciting job.
Yes. I had a great career. I had a wonderful career. And I've been through many changes in my career. You know, I started back in the day when it was film, and we changed to video, and before computers and all of that. But for some reason, at age 53... I just hit a wall. You know, the technology was changing really quickly. And in 2009, the economy was tanking and so many things were changing. And for some reason, I felt like I could not adapt to everything that was happening around me. I just didn't want to. I felt very comfortable with all the ways I had done things before, and I was just not ready to adopt all the social media. And I felt old and out of step for the first time, and I didn't know what to do. And I was angry and frustrated. So that's how I started on this journey. I knew I needed to make change, because I'm also a longtime cancer survivor, and I know life is too precious to spend days and weeks and months being that unhappy.
So was this something you plotted out, and I mean by that, to do something one every day for an entire year, or did it just accumulate and you found yourself doing that?
Well, it definitely was a plan. In the month leading up to January 1st, 2010, I came up with this idea, kind of self-therapy, to do something new every single day. And I started with the polar bear plunge, which was crazy. You know, that's running into the ocean, freezing cold on New Year's Day. And I knew I would have to come up with 364 firsts after that. But, you know, some of them, I made a list. But, you know, it's very hard to come up with that many new first-time experiences. So some days I'd wake up, I didn't know what I was doing. So it was a hodgepodge plan, let's say that.
Well, were there more than 365 ideas that you came up with and you said, well, no, I'm not going to do that one. I'll try this one instead?
There definitely wasn't more. There never was enough, you know. Some days I seriously would wake up and say, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm going to do today. But I made that commitment to myself that I would do something new. And I always found something. Some of these things were really simple. You know, one day I walked around the block backwards with my dog. You know, one day I planted an herb garden. One day I learned a hula hoop. But some things were big. Some things were, you know, physically challenging, like zip lining. Rappelling into a cave. Some things were mentally challenging, like I went back to school and I started teaching school. So, and those were big goals that I had, and I felt like as I got more confidence doing some of the little things, taking risks again, doing things for the first time, I started realizing that I needed to grow and learn and move forward again. And some of those goals and challenges that I was looking toward actually happened.
Now, in the process of doing this and learning something new and doing something different every day, did that change what originally started this whole thing? And by that, I mean adapting to the changes within your job as a journalist.
Oh, absolutely. Because I not only was I doing something new every day, I started blogging about it every single day, which meant that I had to adopt the technology that I had rejected, and I started using it. I think I'd been really afraid of it, but once I started using it, my whole world opened up. I realized these were wonderful, incredible tools, and I brought them all back to the workplace, and I use them every single day now. I'm seriously attached to my iPad, and I'm usually on Facebook and Twitter almost every day. Well, and I enjoy it.
As someone who is a television journalist, do you find that it was a little easier, perhaps, than the average person to do this? Because some of these things that you're talking about that you, I would assume, during the course of 365 days, were things you incorporated into your job or maybe even did a story on.
You know, sometimes things would happen in the course of the day. You know, yeah, you know, like one day I was doing a story and I landed in a horse barn, you know, and these people were mucking hay, and I didn't know what mucking was, but I knew I needed a first-time experience that day. So literally, it's moving horse manure around. Cleaning the stalls, and that's what I did that day. So, yes, sometimes things would just happen during the course of my work day, and I would incorporate them. You know, I was an investigative reporter, and the year I was doing first-time experiences, they asked for a volunteer to do an entertainment show, which I'd never done before. And I did that, and they said, oh, you know, you're not bad. And in the course of that, entertainment show, sometimes things would happen. You know, I cooked with a Food Network star. So, yeah, sometimes my work did give me more opportunities to do first-time experiences, for sure.
Now, one of the things I understand you did during the course of the year was you got to sing on Broadway. How did that come about?
Well, no. We didn't really sing on the stage of Broadway. We sang on Broadway, in front of a theater. Yes, yeah. Literally on Broadway.
I got you.
We were just singing in public. I'm sure if we were anywhere else but New York, people would have looked at us like we were absolute nuts. But nobody paid any attention to us at all. So,
now, as someone who's in the public eye, and as you mentioned, you are a cancer survivor, a lot of times it becomes a situation where you get an opportunity to talk to people and maybe help them through something that you've already been through yourself. With this and the fact that you did a blog, as you said, when did you realize it was more than just a blog, but you had a book?
You know, honestly, I wasn't really thinking about a book the entire time, because for me, it was enough that I opened my life up again, and I was happier, and I was sharing that experience with others who were following my blog. It was really only after the blog that somebody I had met during my year somebody called me from Seattle and said, "Hey, I just looked at your blog, and I think that would be a book." And that person connected me to somebody else. And within a few months, I had a book deal. But it wasn't really, you know, just like so many things that happened to me during the year that were unexpected but wonderful. That was one of the things that happened.
Sometimes when you're living life, you don't really look back and reflect on things. But with the blog and now the book, having done both, what's the biggest thing you learned about yourself?
That I'm never done. You know, and I think that's true for everyone. You know, when we're kids, we do things, new things all the time. That's just part of growing up. But as adults, I think we forget that, because we get into our habits, we get into our routines, we start doing the same things over and over again, and sometimes that's when we get stuck, and that definitely happened to me. As I talked to more and more people, and it was true for me, I kind of felt like, well, I'm done, you know, what's next? You know, there's nothing, I didn't see what was next. And once I started doing first-time experiences, I understood there's always next, there's always more. And I had forgotten to play and to laugh. And when I started doing first-time experiences, it really brought a lot more joy back into my life.
In doing this list, what are some of the most outrageous things that you did in the 365 days?
I ate a scorpion. That was gross. I don't recommend it. One day, I decided that I would eat dessert all day long, and I know that sounds really wonderful. I thought it would be wonderful. That was horrible. I wouldn't do that again. I did so many. I'm trying to think the most. I jumped into a pool with all my clothes on. I rode a mechanical bull. I'm trying to think. You know, there were some nutty things for sure that I did during the year.
Well, it's an entirely eclectic list of things that you've done through the course of the year. Once the year was over, did you actually stop, or has this become part of a routine for you? Do you continue to do new things?
Oh, I definitely look for new things to do. I have to say, I mean, I really did have to push myself, and it is going to the extreme to really try to do something new every day and document it. I mean, I fully recommend it if you can do it. But I think what happened is I have a different attitude now. I say yes to many more things and opportunities, and I look for opportunities to do new things. I went turkey bowling the other day. I was watching a group of college students, you know, turkey bowl, which is taking a frozen turkey and just rolling it on the pavement. at some bowling pins. And normally, you know, I would have just stood there and watched them. But instead I said, no, I want to do it. And that's the kind of attitude that I've adopted now. As I see things, I'm much more willing to go for it. And knowing that first time experiences really help us bring the freshness into life.
Good for you. The book is called I Dare Me, How I Rebooted and Recharged My Life by Doing Something New Every Day, written by Lou Anne Kahn. Lou Anne, thank you very, very much for taking the time in your busy, busy, eclectic life to be on the program with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Lou Anne Kahn, author of I Dare Me, How I Rebooted and Recharged My Life by Doing Something New Every Day. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0233, and you'll find links to Lou Anne's website, and also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Another football season has come to a close, and whether we like it or not, the focus of the sport will now shift from touchdowns and goal line stands to lawsuits over concussions and the future of the game. Violence in football is a serious issue, but it's not a new one. More than 100 years ago, football was nearly banned because of carnage on the field. In 1905, 18 people died playing football. Calls for the game to be outlawed came from major newspapers and even the head of Harvard College. However, President Theodore Roosevelt was a big fan of football and wanted to save it, so he brought together the top coaches and authorities to push for new safety rules, and they did just that. Their efforts even led to the creation of the NCAA. Let's be fair, this story is fascinating for many reasons. One of them is that this entire controversy took place out of a courtroom. That's right, no lawsuits, just cooperation. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we do have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, from NYC. Hello, sir.
Hello from the very cold New York City. Well, maybe not so much today, but the last few days have been very, very cold.
Now, is cold weather good or bad for taxis?
Actually, it's bad, and the reason for that is less people go out onto the streets to do things. So you really don't have that many people out there. But on the other hand, it's tough for passengers because there aren't that many cabs in relationship to the population. We have about 13,000 cabs, which is the same number we had in 1938. So cold is bad for everybody.
Okay. Meanwhile, let's talk about some of the things that's in the news in the New York area. The big story, one of the big stories, is they finally nabbed, I guess, The last remaining perps from the Lufthansa heist oh so many years ago, what, 1978?
Which proves to me the FBI is pretty stupid. What I just said, do you think I'm going to be in trouble? Now they're going to start listening in on all my phone calls. Let me just point out that Peter Anthony Holder had nothing to do with the fact that I just called the FBI stupid. Now, here's a robbery that took place 1978. It was at Lufthansa at Kennedy Airport. I'm not really sure it was even Kennedy Airport then. Yeah, I guess it must have been. And it was like $5 million or something or other. Well, just this past week, they managed to round up the last remaining thugs that they hadn't gotten first time around. And, of course, the FBI, should be maybe the FBI, has a press conference, and you have all the leaders of the FBI, you know, standing there telling everybody how wonderful they are, because they finally have solved and closed this crime. And I'm thinking to myself, if I was in the room, I would start screaming. 38 years? Took you 38 years to catch the perps? FBI? Where's my money going? Give me a break. So I don't think it's such a big deal. And then they made themselves look even more stupid by trying to have a big deal press conference about it.
Well, speaking about jail, I understand that people who live near Rikers are paying more for insurance. That doesn't really surprise me, though.
Well, yeah, but it's not because of the danger of the prisoners or anything. It's not like they're escaping into the neighborhood. In the United States, I'm sure in almost any place in the world, insurance for cars and homes and stuff is usually determined by the area you live in. Presumably, if you live in a poor neighborhood, they have to charge you, they meaning the insurance company, has to charge you more money because there's a better chance you're going to get robbed. I don't know that that's necessarily true because, frankly, if I were going to rob somebody, I wouldn't hang out on a poor street in Harlem. I would hang out on Fifth Avenue. But that's just the way I would be, the crook. So in any event, the area, which is called Astoria, which is near to Rikers Island, our famous prison, the people who live in that area are really upset because they have found out that when they do the demographics of the area, the insurance companies are including the prisoners. So if you look at it that way, then Astoria is one of the most dangerous places on the face of the earth. But it really isn't because all the prisoners are locked up. So basically what the people are saying is you shouldn't be charging us a higher rate just because we happen to live near a prison.
Okay, well, you can look at it two ways, I guess. But speaking of prisons, what's the deal with kosher food in jail?
Well, here's the thing. For many, many, many years, if you were an Orthodox Jewish person, or for that matter, even a Muslim, when you were in the slammer, you could actually order, at least New York slammers, you could actually order a kosher meal, which would be good for a Muslim, would be good for a Jewish person. And that was sort of like an accommodation because you figured even though the bad guys are the bad guys, they're entitled to follow their religious beliefs. Well, all of a sudden, the city's correction department has discovered, and I could have told them this, that a regular meal costs $4. A kosher meal costs $16. It's four times as much. I mean, costs for the city to provide it. So what's happening is that people who are not Jews and not Muslims, well, maybe they are Jews and they are Muslims, but they're certainly not devout enough being kosher or keeping strict, have been ordering these meals. And the Department of Corrections says, no, 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 unless you can prove to us that you're really a religious and a devout Muslim or a religious and devout Jewish person, we're not going to let you have the kosher meals. I can assure you that this is all wasted energy because the Civil Liberties Union will not let this pass, guaranteed. There's going to be all kinds of court cases. The Department of Corrections is going to end up losing, and anybody who wants a kosher meal is going to get it. That's my prediction. You heard it here first.
Okay, and sticking with one particular religious group, I understand someone has been charged with stealing money from a particular council.
Well, I mean, you know, it's even when you find out, I mean, like, for instance, today we found out that the head of the library makes $400,000 a year and has a car and all kinds of expenses. Then the thing that you're referring to is for Jewish charities. The guy who was running that was stealing all the money. So, I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. It's sort of these people talk out of two sides of their faces. Number one, they're working for charities and supposed to be doing good things, and they're getting paid an awful lot of money, far more money than they should be. And then besides that, they're stealing it. I mean, where does this greed end? I say to you, where does this greed end?
Okay, so since you brought that up, tell me about Jamie Dimon, who was the boss at J.P. Morgan. Apparently Jamie is getting a raise.
Yeah, Jamie's a boy, by the way.
Yeah, he's getting a raise, yes.
Yeah, he's getting a raise. Even though the Chase got hit with a $20 billion fine for all its shenanigans, this guy has just gotten an increase in his salary to $20 million. I mean, it's just absolutely, I'm going to gag on my tongue, I think. It's just absolutely amazing that he and I guess the other bums who run the Chase are making that kind of money, and nothing happens to them. And yet I guarantee if some kid who's hungry steals a wallet from somebody on the streets of New York, he's going to go away for 20 years. So anyway, this guy gets, you know, I don't even know how I could spend $20 million a year. I mean, I guess you could spend it, but I mean, how many houses can you have? How many cars can you have? How many, you know, first thing, if I made $20 million a year, I'd give you a gift of $1 million, see?
Okay. And speaking of poor kids, you mentioned poor kids doing something wrong. What is it that the New York Daily News has against that poor, sweet Canadian Justin Bieber?
Well, first of all, nobody here knew he was a Canadian, and nobody paid. It's like the Toronto Dominion Bank, which is all over New York City. They also don't tell you that they're Canadian, which is kind of weird. Justin Bieber, I don't think, has ever made a point out about the fact that he's Canadian. Anyway, the Daily News, which is our major newspaper here, is very upset about his behavior because he takes drugs, supposedly, and liquor and all this other stuff, carries on, smashes up rooms and what have you. So the Daily News is calling for him to be deported, which is, like, so weird. I mean, so, you know, I want to get in on the deal, and I've announced that if the Daily News wants him to go back to Canada, pay me, and I'll take him back.
And by the way, for the trivia records out there, you mentioned the Toronto Dominion Bank, or the TD Bank as it's known nowadays. Do you know, Peter, that there are more TD banks in the United States than there are in Canada?
Well, I didn't know that, but I will tell you they're in New York City, and as much as I hate to do this, I'm going to pay them a very nice compliment. They are getting excellent, excellent reports in the way they deal with people here, and they even have a campaign that asks you to come into the bank, even if you're not a depositor, and to take one of their pens.
There you go.
Which people are doing. Well, no, they're very, it seems like a lovely look. Also, they're one of the few banks that give change without making a big deal out of it. Do you have a deposit here? Do you have an account here? How long have you been with us? Okay, I'll give you change at $10.
Well, you know, they are Canadian, Peter. I mean, that's just the way we are. Which leads me to wrap this up by saying that you do have a celebrity sighting of the week, I understand.
And you're going to tell me he's Canadian?
Absolutely, if it's what I'm thinking.
See, I didn't know that, but I could tell from the way, your shifty way of asking the question. Yeah, Brendan Fraser, and he was in Times Square, and the reason he was in Times Square, the same reason everybody's hanging out in Times Square, is, you remember once upon a time, a few days ago, or was it a day ago, we had a Super Bowl? Well, anyway, prior to, in the week that led up to that Super Bowl, you had all kinds of events going on so you could make money and hustle and blah, blah, blah. And they had a lot of stuff going on in Times Square. And I strolled over there to take a look and see what was going on. And I saw him. So there you are, my celebrity sighting. We didn't talk at all. And I don't know whether he was going to or did go to the game. But that's the way it is. I can tell you now, I certainly didn't go to the game. And as a matter of fact, I don't even know who won.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the reasons why there were so many Canadian celebrities about is because we can handle the cold weather.
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, today while I'm talking to you, I've just started doing something very new. I've never done it before. I'm wearing a vest which is heated by a little battery contraption. And so far, because the temperature, you know, has been very cold here and probably will continue to be cold. So I'm either going to be very warm and toasty all day, or I'm going to electrocute myself.
Well, on that note, people can find out more information. And we don't want you to electrocute yourself. People can find out more information by going to your website at Gabby.com. They can send you an email at peter@gabby.com. Thank you very much, sir, and stay warm.
I will. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program. We just have one more item to get to before we wrap things up, and that, of course, is the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Security cameras captured a man kissing a store mannequin and carrying out a sex act in southern Brazil. Security guards discovered the unusual incident after trawling through CCTV following a break-in at the mall. After stealing a variety of discount value clothes, the man can be seen propping a headless female mannequin against the wall in a corridor. He proceeds to kiss the dummy's breasts before carrying out a sex act. Basically, he enjoys the pleasure of his own company. Wearing a t-shirt over his head, the man then pulls up his shorts and walks away. The footage was later posted on YouTube, where it's been viewed thousands of times. The offender has since been arrested after he returned to the store and was recognized by staff. Police believe he stole the clothes to sell them for drug money. The suspect told the newspaper he had broken into the shopping center because he had, quote, nothing else to do. I'm guessing he also had no one else to do. Now, why would someone in the middle of a burglary stop to have sex with a mannequin, especially when everyone knows malls have security cameras? One reason, and one reason only, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0233. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0233. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberstationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Guests of the Stuff File program stay at their own homes. Trust me, I'm the voice for this program. I know there's no budget for accommodations. I'm reading this on a futon.